Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Wunderbar! The football is back and Bayern and Dortmund picked up where they left off.
Schubert's clearance is poor, only to De Hood. Dortmund in attacking threat mode immediately. Here's Rafael Guerrero, across the keeper, bottom corner, Borussia Dortmund 2, Schalke 0 in the Riviera Derby.
On the right, driven in with pace, and the header is into the bottom corner, and it is Benjamin Pavard, who has doubled Bayern's advantage. The champions are back in business.
Let's not pretend Germany went off without a hitch. There are a few minor incidents. How close is the Premier League, though, to returning? Bearing in mind the increasing number of voices saying, not for me. However, we are here to look at the positives. Big name guest this week, Jeepers Keepers. We have the England number one, Karen Barnsley, on Phil Neville. David Martin, the West Ham goalkeeper, on growing up at Liverpool and being emotional with his dad. And Ian Dark, the BT commentator, on a very different commentary confinement. Auf dem absolut fantastischen Game Day podcast von TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
And allegedly that translates to all on the absolutely fantastic Game Day podcast from TalkSport, if we do say so. Ourselves. Man, I'm getting into all this German stuff. Hello, one and all. And joining me, as always, is the omnipresent crowbar crook. He manages to find himself on every single programme. Breakfast, reviewing the papers. He breaks news for Jim White. He's on the quiz on a Friday night. He writes the quiz on drive time. He stuck his hand up for a return to reporting on live football too last weekend because the Bundesliga is back. Oh, yes. It sounds lovely, doesn't it? How are you getting on, crowbar?
That nickname reminds me of that comedy, wasn't it? Write the theme tune, sing the theme tune. Who was that? That was
Little Britain.
Harry Enfield, wasn't it? Oh, it was a Little Britain.
Matt Lucas, yeah. It's a little bit more relevant than Harry Enfield, which was probably around about 20 years ago. But anyway, how are you getting on? Okay.
Yeah, I've been busy. Been really busy.
We know.
Back on the golf course, back on the tennis court, swimming in the sea every day with my clothes on, despite suggestions to the contrary from Jim White. And as you know, Sam, my skinny dipping days are long behind me.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. You love a skinny dip. In fact, you love a bit of nakedness, don't you? You tend to get naked quite a lot. I don't know why that is.
Not so much now. Maybe I've grown up.
Almost got arrested in Bulgaria, if I remember rightly, for getting half naked.
That is true, right in front of the Houses of Parliament. And when the soldier with the gun appeared, that was a bit worrying.
Yeah, you put your clothes on pretty sharpish then, didn't you? Some big news and some serious news to talk about shortly. We will get our serious hats on. But first of all, let's talk about the return of the Bundesliga. I absolutely loved it. I've got to be honest with you. I know it wasn't perfect, folks. And it did lack a little bit of atmosphere. Some of the defending was a bit, hello. Yes, Eintracht Frankfurt, I'm talking about you. But the fact that I can utter that phrase, the defending was a bit hello, fills me with joy. The fact that we've got football to comment on is great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Saturday. It was great being able to dip in and out of games. Obviously, I had the Dortmund match on the main screen. That was really good. I was impressed with Dortmund and their talented youngsters. Obviously, I kept an eye on our team, Hertha Berlin. What an away win that was. But I dipped in and out of the other games as well. And if that's a taste of what's to come with Operation Restart in the Premier League, then it definitely whetted the appetite. I didn't particularly enjoy Bayern Munich so much on the Sunday. I just thought they lacked a bit of intensity.
Yeah, but you know
they weren't
that
really
was.
Playing
you know
anybody.
That was. They're playing Union. You know I mean, for God's sakes. I mean, it's just like playing like a fourth division team, isn't it? You know, who are they? Big Berlin derby is Friday, of course. We're on air with a quiz at 8 o'clock. And Hertha and Union, our team Hertha taking on their city rivals, Union, at 7:30. I don't know how we're going to play this. What are we going to do? We're going to watch the first 30, quiz it with it on in the background, and then the last 15 sort of concentrate and try not to cheer and shout during the quiz. I don't know what we're going to do here. I'm going to have to take a bit of organising. It is. Well, we can't change the kickoff time, so we're going to have to just put up with it. I'm going to have it on the big screen in the background, I think.
Yeah, we'll have our scarves at the ready and our replica shirts. Even our producer has crowbarred our way into getting a scarf, hasn't she?
Oh, Lucy, yeah, I noticed that. She started sending people tweets trying to get freebies. Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah, it did work, actually, to be fair. She knows what she's up to. I thought Dortmund were excellent in what could have been a very tricky game against Schalke, like you said, and they'll be back on TalkSport this Saturday afternoon as they take on Wolfsburg. Big game, that, at the Volkswagen Arena. Borussia Dortmund chasing down Bayern, unbeaten in 9 meetings with the Wolves, and are in possession of a fearsome front line. Haaland, as we should say. Sancho, Torgan Hazard, who I thought was very, very good. Guerrero, breaking from left wing back. I mean, fantastic going forward. Wolfsburg arguably scored one of the goals of the weekend with a wunderbar header from Renato Stefan. Right from the edge of the area. It was a brilliant, powerful header. And they got a last-minute winner away at Augsburg as well. Augsburg, sorry. I've got a bit better with my German pronunciation. Augsburg, Haaland. Right, should we get to the top stories? Two members of staff and one player have tested positive for coronavirus at Watford, where the club captain, Troy Deeney, has already decided to opt out of training because he was concerned over safety.
According to reports, other players at the club have also expressed reluctance on going back to training. Head coach Nigel Pearson said at the weekend, "God forbid we have a fatality. People are closing their eyes to that threat."
Danny Rose reiterated his concerns, the on-loan Newcastle defender suggesting players are being used as lab rats this week.
It is Mental Health Week this week, and the PFA have revealed that more than 50 footballers are currently suffering from depression.
Erling Braut Haaland turned down a move to Juventus in January because they were going to play him in the under-23s. He has since scored 13 goals in 12 games for Borussia Dortmund since moving from Red Bull Salzburg.
Yeah, not the best interviewee, though. The mighty Manchester United have been linked with a move for Wolves wide man Adama Traore.
Is that bullying of a 19-year-old?
I think it all got a little bit silly.
It's ridiculous.
It was a snippet from a wider interview. I do think he was trying to be clever. We've all been on the end of that. It's not a great position to be in as a broadcaster, as an interviewer. But listen, as you say, he's 19
years of age. And it
didn't
happen over the weekend, did it? It wasn't like it happened at the weekend. We had the interview, the German TV interview that we played out on Talk Sport on Saturday, and we were commending him for the way he talked. So I do think that was probably an incident where, and these things do happen, by the way, people fall out. I don't know what the backstory is behind it, but I thought the sort of trolling of him was particularly OTT.
I've got to say, I interviewed Aaron Moy down at Brighton early in the season, and you would expect a brash, confident Australian. He was giving me one-word answers in interviews, not necessarily because he was trying to be clever or funny. He was just a really bad interviewee. Not everybody is blessed with the ability to give perfect, elongated interviews. We just have to accept it.
Yeah, I did an interview once with... I tried to do an interview with Wayne Routledge once, and he said to me, "I can't do it because I haven't had a day off this week."
Bless him.
Ian Dark on Commentating from Home is on the way very shortly, but let's have a quick chat about the latest developments in the Premier League. Back to training in small groups. 6 positive tests were returned from 748 conducted in the initial wave. But the fact that there were a cluster at Watford, should that deflate the optimism that football's on the way back?
Not necessarily, because I don't think there's any suggestion that the reason that the Watford players and staff tested positive were because they've been hanging out. You know, it's just an unlucky coincidence that it's hit that club. I actually think 6 positive tests out of 748 is a really encouraging number. It's less than 1%. I thought it would be much higher than that. So I'm feeling more positive about Operation Restart at the moment.
Key thing for me is to remember that the players are human, and I don't think that moaning to the press and using words like lab rats actually helps anyone. Clearly the Premier League, like offices, like schools, like surgeries, like construction sites, like hospitals, all are making every effort to make their environment as safe as possible. But I do think if players decide they don't want to play, then that is a personal choice and it should be respected, because there might be other circumstances in their life that we're not particularly privy to, which means that they feel unsafe in putting, or they feel that the risk is too high for them to get back involved. I think you have more people expressing concerns here than you did in Germany. I don't think we had the volume of voices saying, I don't fancy this, thank you very much. But then I think you also got to remember that the scale of the epidemic in the UK and its consequences have been exponentially larger here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think it's difficult to sympathise with Danny Rose because you've got a footballer who's publicly admitted on more than one occasion he doesn't particularly enjoy football. So no surprise, really, that he doesn't want to go back to playing. The Troy Deeney situation is slightly difficult. He has his own health reasons and health issues in his family. I think you have to understand that. Also, I do wonder how much of it is to do with the fact he's based in Birmingham and maybe he doesn't see the point at this stage in driving all the way to Hertfordshire to train on his own for an hour.
I don't think
and then go back to the family home.
I don't think that's the situation at all. I think, you know, speaking to him, we have spent a bit of time talking to him, you know, he is quite rightly concerned about the health of his young boy who's 5 months old and was born with breathing difficulties. I mean, would you take a... You wouldn't take that risk. There's no way you'd take that risk. I wouldn't take that risk. So I can completely understand why he's made that decision.
Yeah, I agree. I guess the question is, did he need to be so public about it or could he have kept his own counsel? I guess as journalists, for us to come out and attack people for speaking their mind, Paul Barber at Brighton has had the same sort of treatment by some columnists, would be a little bit hypocritical. Joshua King over in Norway is another player as an asthmatic and someone with a young son who has also expressed some concern, although my understanding is that he is expected to report back for training at Bournemouth this week, which maybe wasn't necessarily the case initially.
No, a couple of weeks ago, I think that would have been a different circumstance. And I think, you know, clubs as well have got to balance it, a balancing act to make as well, because they're in a situation where I'm sure they do not want to be the bad guy saying, actually, you've got to come back from wherever you are to training, especially if people have gone away into environments where it's a lot safer and there are less infections and things are a lot healthier, and saying, actually, you've got to leave that safe confine of Norway or wherever it is you are and come back to a place which is full of infection. I'm not necessarily sure that that's a very helpful line to take, and it's not one that I don't think the clubs are relishing having to do. They don't want to play the bad guy here. I thought Danny Mills was interesting on kickoff on Tuesday night when he was asked whether or not he would go back to training in these circumstances. He said he'd think about it and considerations would involve whether he trusted his teammates. Are they going to follow the rules? Well, if his teammate was Serge Aurier, the answer would be no, wouldn't it? I mean, not only has he had a jogging video with a friend, now today he's put out a picture of him and a barber after having a haircut. I mean, you can only hope that it was a haircut that happened a long time ago and he was just trying to promote his barber. But it certainly Spurs have had to start an investigation about that now. So it's not a particularly great look.
No, I think this is a situation where you're absolutely right. You do need to be able to trust your colleagues. And it's the same in any work environment, actually. And I thought Adrian Durham made a really good point on Drive midweek. And he was saying that football can be an example to the rest of the country in terms of duty of care for employees. Because let's face it, people working in Tesco and Asda aren't going to get the same level of care that our Premier League footballers are getting. They aren't going to be tested on a regular basis. And they aren't necessarily going to be kept apart quite so stringently as Premier League players are. I mean, look at Bournemouth, for example. We mentioned them. They're giving each of their players their own match ball so that they don't even have to share balls when they're returning to training. I mean, I think that maybe is going too far, but that every club is taking their own initiative and their own steps to make sure that everybody is keeping absolutely safe.
Well, this is a story that is going to be constantly evolving, so stay tuned to TalkSport for all the key updates. You won't have to listen too long before Crowbar Crook edges himself into another great show on the network. This week saw the return of the Bundesliga live on BT Sports, and with all eyes across the world on the Germans, the audience was huge, especially in England. So a bit more pressure for our next guest, our commentator, Ian Dark, who made it even more strange for himself. He commentated from home on Hoffenheim against Hertha. What was it like? I mean, it must have been very odd for you. I mean, doing it from a spare bedroom at home rather than being even in an off-tube booth, which is where we do it off pitches in a sort of quite sanitised environment, you know, and compared to a stadium, it's completely alien.
It was very, very strange and a little bit scary, to be honest with you. I mean, what happened is I got a lot of equipment, enough really to start the International Space Station, delivered in the midweek. You know, my office looked like... You know, the flight deck of a Boeing 747 by the time they finish with it, with all the wires everywhere. I don't know how it worked. As you know, Sam, all commentators are complete technophobes. Well, maybe not you. I think you might be the exception. But anyway, it was all lashed up. So then when you get down to be doing the game, as you well know, doing games off tube, as we call it in the trade, that is working off TV pictures and not in the stadium, is obviously more difficult because you're dependent totally on whatever pictures the director cuts. As it happened from Hoffenheim, it was a fairly high camera, pretty difficult. Two teams we don't see a lot of, although I've watched a lot of the tape. And then, of course, as sophisticated as the system is, it does depend on your Wi-Fi signal at home. So occasionally the picture would freeze. And that is the scary bit.
At least they had patches on the back of their shirt, though.
Yes, they had nice numbers, yeah. So as you know with these things, I mean, we shouldn't give away too many secrets of the trade, should we? But it often takes you sort of 10 minutes, quarter of an hour to get yourself fully comfortable with all the players that are out there, where they're playing, the systems and so on.
I was going to ask about that because obviously a lot of players in the Premier League maybe aren't happy about Operation Restart because they need more time to get up to match sharpness. It's the same for commentators, isn't it? Did you find that after not doing a game for several weeks, you almost needed a mini pre-season?
Yeah, I did, if I'm totally honest with you. I did because, there is a little bit of rust. As you know, you hope that the viewers are not noticing it, but sometimes you find yourself just reaching out for the phrase and maybe the fluency that you would have hoped for isn't quite there. But quite often, I think, if we're all honest, doing our peculiar trade, when we put the microphone down at the end, the first thought is usually one of relief. Did we get away with it? I think I got away with it because the goal scorers were right, the score was right, and there weren't too many misidentifications, I don't think.
Do you feel more pressure because you knew it was the first sort of tentative steps back into live football?
Yeah, a little bit, but I think you should always feel that anyway as a commentator. I think the day we are totally relaxed just starting, that there's not enough of an adrenaline rush. So, yeah, you're right, Sam. I think there was a feeling, yeah, people are watching these games because it's the only game in town, almost literally, the Bundesliga at the moment, isn't it? So, yes, just a little bit of extra pressure, though I was pretty conscious, if I'm honest with you, that I would have thought most viewers would have been on the Dortmund Schalke game.
Not me and Crook. Not me and Crook. We were with you.
Why? Where were you two?
We're Hertha Berlin fans. We're in the ultras. We've literally adopted Hertha Berlin on this podcast over the course of the last 4 or 5 weeks. The listeners voted and that was it.
You'll be delighted with their win, won't you? I mean, they're brilliant away, as you're well known.
What a fantastic goal that third one was, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, that probably got hidden in all league because all the focus was on that the derby between Dortmund and Schalke. But yeah, that was a sensational goal. If Messi had scored it, we'd be watching it 10,000 times.
Yeah, we certainly enjoyed that one. I mean, working from home does have its own pitfalls. I regularly have to usher my 3 under 10-year-olds out of my office just as I'm getting ready to go on air. Sometimes you get a dog barking. One of your colleagues was interrupted by a Tesco delivery driver. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I had a chat with Paul Dempsey. I mean, he's a hero, really, this weekend, because I think he did 4 matches from home. That takes some doing at the best of times, even if you're working from stadiums. So, yeah, he told me the story that during the game in the first half, there was a guy from Tesco trying to deliver some groceries, banging on the door, and he wouldn't go away. There was no one else to answer it, apparently. But the point you make there is interesting. I mean, if you've got young kids, I don't have any more, not at home anyway, and or a dog who's maybe a puppy. I mean, they're all going to get on the air somewhere, I think.
Did you commentate differently because you knew the audience had a different level of knowledge on the Bundesliga? I know that's what we do, sort of ITV commentaries. We're often told that at a World Cup, for example, the audience is so large that you're going to get a large proportion of people that don't have expert knowledge of football. So you need to be a little bit broader with your brush. Was that similar at the weekend?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. But you tried to maybe, I mean, when I was doing the team news, I was talking about how Grujic was on loan from Liverpool and, of course, how the Manchester City and Celtic fans had known Dedrick Boyata, that kind of thing as well. Yeah, just really try to get people involved in the plot of the game and really tell them almost from a blank page a little bit about those two teams, especially who I think people would not know a heck of a lot about. I think, you know, the European football diehards would, but most of the people watching would say, well, tell me something about these teams, get me involved in it. And I think that's part of the commentator's job.
Do you think this pandemic could change the way we broadcast long term? Because organisations now know that they can do things from home that maybe they wouldn't have attempted before. Clubs can get away with doing managerial press conferences via Zoom rather than inviting the media en masse into their training ground.
I hope not. I really hope that that isn't the signal, because these days, very many organisations, and maybe for very good financial reasons, the bottom line is the money, isn't it? So if you're trying to cut corners and save money, well, in a way, we make a rod for our own back. If we do a decent commentary sitting at home, somebody somewhere is going to say, well, why are we going to send the commentators all that way with the airfares and paying for the commentary positions when they can do it from home? So I hope it's not the tip of an iceberg. I really do. But you might have a good point.
Yeah, it's something that you and I have talked about before, about the difficulties of doing it off-tube. Doing it off-tube from your home is even harder. But I imagine that whereas it does come with some benefits, because usually at half-time you'd be stuck on a gantry, freezing yourself to death, looking for somewhere to get a cup of tea from. But, I mean, at half-time on Saturday, you could have popped down to the fridge and made your own cup of tea. I mean, what did you do at half-time?
Well, my wife was very kind. She brought me in a cup of tea and a biscuit. We've all been eating too many biscuits, of course, during this lockdown. But that was nice. And on a cold winter's day, it wasn't a cold winter's day, you could do with that kind of home comforts, let's put it that way. So, yeah, that was one compensatory factor. But talking about what you said there, Sam, about how it being more difficult off tube, there was the story, and I'm not going to mention the commentator concerned, to save his blushes, not that he was to blame, of a game where a goal is scored. And you know what happens when a goal is scored? There's four replays immediately of the goal.
Yep.
Well, during the four replays, unbeknown to him, the goal had been disallowed. When the pictures came back off the replays, the game had resumed. He didn't know that goal hadn't stood and had the wrong scoreline and the wrong situation in the game. Not much you can do about that, you know.
Happened to me. Happened to me live on ITV4. Happened to me in an Audi Cup game. Bayern Munich against Liverpool, I think it was. It was definitely Liverpool involved in it. It was a goal scored, went to the four replays, came back. Obviously, it was doing it off tube from London studios. The score bug had changed over in the top left-hand corner to represent that it was 2-0 instead of 1-0. And then after about a minute and a half, the score bug changed back to 1-0. And that's when we realised. How on earth would we know? We would never know. Because there was no... Because by the time that they'd started again, by the time the replays had finished, they'd started again and the game was in flow. So we would never have known that the goal had been chalked off.
Get out of that, as they say, eh? I mean, you know, I always say it, we're commentators, not miracle workers.
Yeah, we just put our hands up and said, this is what must have happened, and we had to explain it. It was an absolute nightmare. It was so embarrassing. It was terrible.
And nobody's going to forgive you, are they? Not these days on social media. You're just going to be slaughtered on social media as being incompetent. And how have you got the job? Why are they paying you for this stuff?
One element we haven't touched on is the ghost game, the lack of supporters. How much did that change the way that you approached it as a commentator? Did it feel odd with a vast arena having nobody in it?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, actually. I think that was the biggest thing about it. No matter how good the players are and even how good the game is, it feels like a training exercise, a reserve game, without that soundtrack in the background, that passion. And I think that's a big thing. And I was hearing this morning an interview with Didi Hamann, the old Liverpool player. And apparently in Germany, you can take an option on the TV of having a kind of dummy soundtrack, which, of course, these days can be more sophisticated than in the past. Apparently, that's quite good. So I think that may be something, far be it from me, because I don't make the decisions, that BT Sport maybe want to have a look at with the Bundesliga, because I think that would make quite a big difference to the televisual experience.
A quick word on Hertha Berlin, who you watched, our great team, our boys, our winners, our champions above Union in the table now. That's all we're really worried about. Big derby on Friday night. What did you think of them?
You're doing a very good impersonation of a real Hertha Berlin fan.
Where's my? I've got my Hertha Berlin scarf and shirt here somewhere.
I thought they played. I mean, as you well know, they've been letting in a lot of goals this season. I think this was their worst defensive record at this stage for 29 years. Letting in 48. So the clean sheet was good. I mean, yeah, being honest, Hoffenheim missed some good chances in the first half, particularly Baumgartner, that one he had. I mean, that was really not much more than a tap-in. But they rode their luck a little bit, but they were deserved winners, I thought, in the end. I think they had the best player on the pitch, didn't they, in Ibisevic, who was crafty and good and a thorn in the side. Great to see him at the age of 35. And, you know, you said about telling stories, and his story is a fascinating one. You know, fleeing the Balkan Wars and living in America and sort of obviously very bad experiences because he can't even talk about what happened to him in his childhood. So, you know, he was a story, and he got a very good goal with that header. So, yeah, they were worthy winners of the game. I think their opponents are on a bit of a crest of a slump, aren't they? But I think Hertha Berlin, despite all these managerial changes this season and the fiasco with Klinsmann, are probably on their way up the table a bit. They've got the derby coming up on Friday night, haven't they, against the Union?
Yeah, it's going to be cracking. Thanks very much to Ian Dark for joining us and taking us through his thoughts on the Bundesliga from last weekend and what it was like to broadcast his commentary from home for BT Sport last weekend. Did you feel better after listening to Ian Dark about Hertha's chances of survival? I mean, jumping above Union was particularly impressive, I thought, this weekend. That was the biggest feather in the cap.
Yeah, there was some quality football on display, not least that goal from Cunha. And Ian Dark obviously probably studied the game more religiously than I did, because I was flicking through matches. Clearly, he was really impressed. He mentioned that away record. I think maybe we've joined the fan base at a good time. Maybe we've actually changed their
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Fortune.
England number one, Karen Bardsley and David Martin of West Ham United to come in a bit of a goalkeeper mashup later on. But there's been a ramping up of football content with the return of the Bundesliga and the rerunning of Euro 96 on ITV. The night against the Dutch was obviously spectacular. We've seen that very recently. And to be honest, it was a brilliant performance from two strikers who had got pelters in the previous game against Scotland. I don't know if you saw that game against Scotland when it was replayed on Sunday night. But Big Ron was getting absolutely stuck into Teddy Sheringham for a start.
Yeah, he was. And we're going to be having Darren Anderton on the Game Day podcast in the coming weeks. But I was speaking to him last week and he was saying about the pressure that they were under, you know, after all the shenanigans that went on pre-tournament with the dentist chair and the smash TV on the aeroplane, and they didn't play well against Switzerland. They didn't play that well against Scotland either. And basically, the whole tournament turned in the space of 60 seconds. The David Seaman penalty save when Yuri Geller got involved. And if you watch it, the ball definitely does move before McAllister strikes it. No question about that. Yeah. And then the Gazza goal. And of course, the shackles came off against Holland. And the rest is history. Although maybe it's not that dissimilar to the last World Cup in that you can actually count the number of good performances on one hand. They played really well against the Dutch. It was a grind against Spain. They were actually really good against Germany and probably deserved to win it. But some of the group stages weren't that inspiring.
Yeah, well, I've certainly enjoyed watching it, rewatching it back, and also I've never really sort of, everyone talks about the Scotland game as if it was a great big fantastic event, but actually, yeah, I've always thought that the Dutch game was the pinnacle for me, and it's always been the pinnacle England performance. And to be honest, watching that Scotland game, I didn't realise how bad it was. It was a poor performance, really. They didn't get going until Jamie Redknapp came on. Jamie Redknapp actually really lifted them once he came off the bench at half-time. And then he ends up getting injured after about 20 minutes, which is a disaster for England, really.
That doesn't sound like Jamie Redknapp getting injured. You sure?
He definitely did get injured, yeah. But we've all got our guilty pleasures, haven't we? I know you've got yours, Coronation Street. It's one of those things you do in the wee hours of the morning when no one else is looking to keep you entertained. Mine's Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Have you ever seen The Real Housewives of Cheshire, though?
You know what? Unfortunately, I have, because I have a wife who is obsessed with all those reality TV stuff.
You must be able to watch something else, right? You've got another TV, you've got an iPad or something.
Well, sometimes I have to feign a passing interest, but I mean, listen, it's car crash television. But I did speak to a Premier League player whose wife plays a starring role. He's no other than Burnley defender Eric Peters. And I did ask him, because we all know what footballers are like, how much stick he takes after every episode.
Every single Monday morning on the session, I have heard loads of times, tonight they're going to sit down, going to watch The Real Housewives of Cheshire. I'm like, boy, you're going to watch it? I have to watch you. I have to watch your missus. Can't miss anything. Of course, the Tuesday coming up, a lot of stick I got. But it's good, though. You know, the thing is, like, the missus supports me everything what I do. And there's a small thing what I can do to pay that back and just supporting her and what she loves to do as well. So, yeah, it was kind of funny. She did a step back down now to not be in the show as much as possible. Being busy with her own stuff. But it was a good fun.
One of the themes in the show, I think, is that you adopted a couple of rescue dogs. Is that right? Has your love of dogs sort of given you something to focus on during these times of lockdown and isolation?
Yeah, we have four dogs now at the moment. And looks like gonna stick with that as well. No, the missus rescued two dogs from Bosnia, where she originally is from. She saw those... the first day, but she called me the last day when she was in Bosnia for a week, do some TV stuff, interviews and all kinds. And then she called me up crying, saying, I found these puppies. They can't live on the streets anymore. I was like, what do you want to do? I want to rescue them. And there were eight of them. I said, baby, can't rescue eight dogs. Even though we can make the space for them, but we can't rescue eight dogs. So can I take two then? So take two and see what we can do with it and see how it goes, because it was kind of big struggle to get them back in the UK, of course, as well with the UK stepping out of Europe, all this stuff. So but at the end we managed to do it, and they've been really, really good at the moment, and during this lockdown they keep you alive, to be honest. But in the future, we're looking forward to rescue more dogs and give them a better home.
I would not be happy if I got a phone call and my wife was saying, I found some puppies. Can I adopt them? How many are there? Eight puppies. No, that ain't happening. And to be fair, I give him a little bit of kudos, because he did stand up to her and say, no, you can only have two.
Oh, what a brave man.
Actually, to be fair, I probably would have just given in, because I'm that weak. Right, how difficult must it be to be a goalkeeper in lockdown? Let's get to our interviews with David Martin, the West Ham goalie, on David Seaman and Phil Parks. But first, I caught up with England's number one goalkeeper, Karen Bardsley of Manchester City, to check in with how she's doing, having not played for 9 months.
It's hard to kind of actually hear that said. It doesn't seem as long as that, but it certainly has felt it. Yeah, it's been a pretty trying time, not going to lie. It's been a really, really long time away from football, and it was a pretty lonely existence, you know, being stuck in the gym, essentially, trying to get back to fitness after a pretty awkward injury and surgery. So I was just cleared for a return to training, and I'd been training for about 2 or 3 days with the girls that were still at the club over the international break. And I could not wait for everyone to return from the She Believes Cup and the Cyprus Cups and their various tournaments And yeah, we went into isolation the day before everyone was meant to return in preparation for the FA Cup.
No.
So yeah, it's just like it just kept getting more and more extended, and I was just like, oh my gosh, like this is really, really strange. So yeah, it's been a long time since I've played a game of football. It's it kind of messes with you a little bit. You kind of forget, like, what am I doing here? You know, you're like, I was saying to some of the girls, it felt like I had won a competition, and I was just kind of like getting to hang out at the training ground. You know, it's like, oh, I get to be around everyone every day, and you know, this is great.
How is England's number one goalie coping with lockdown itself? Are you finding it easier? Have you got new habits? Have you been training in weird ways? What are you doing?
Yeah, it's been pretty weird. I think it's been pretty weird for everyone. So I don't think by any means I'm alone in
that
regard.
But it's harder for a goalie, right?
I suppose. I mean, yeah, it does kind of help if you got someone to take shots at you and everything like that. But I think for me, fortunately, I always keep myself pretty busy and occupied anyway. I always got something kind of on the go, whether it's, you know, a random research project or something nerdy like that.
What are you researching?
Well, like future trends in women's football and in various sports, a few things for Man City, and kind of spinning the cogs in the background, you know, about what it takes to win, things like that. I'm also doing some stuff with the Women's Sports Trust. So yeah, it's been pretty cool. You know, I think you actually mentioned it about, you know, picking up cooking and kind of enjoying that a little bit more. I believe you said you were a budding master chef.
I am,
you
know, now, so. Yeah. I mean, I've had to teach myself, you know, but it's okay. I think, you know, the poor old guys that present MasterChef are quaking in their boots because I'm coming for them.
Right? Right? Well, I'm hoping that you stick to your word, because I'd love to see you on it, because I've been watching loads of it. I mean, I was never a great chef beforehand, but yeah, I've certainly taken to it. I love like doodling, drawing. So I'm doing some of those. There's some online, what would you call it? Like life drawing classes that you can tune into, and you can draw like models and things like that. So
well, that's good.
Really, really random. Been doing, you know, obviously like the clubs provided us with some equipment, and we've been doing like our home workouts and individualized plans, but every once in a while you tune into, you know, like an Instagram live and kind of join in with that if you want something different. We've done some like hip hop abs and all sorts of, you know, terrible things like that, but it's been good fun.
Manchester City doing some good stuff, including the nurse training at the Etihad. I mean, have you heard anything about that? Have you seen anything of that? I know that the community stuff they're always pretty good with.
Yeah, you know, I was definitely aware that the club donated to the food banks as well as Man United. I'm aware that they've transformed the Etihad into a place where the NHS or essential workers can go and get testing, and they can offer testing to the wider population, as well as providing facilities for them to go and, you know, rest, recuperate, train if they want to, those types of things. So I think also I believe the citizens page has become, you know, a place where you can get access to videos, to training videos, just kind of like mental health care stimulation and things like that. So you can play games and stay active. They've provided some activities for kids and things like that. So yeah, I think, you know, they're definitely playing their part in the community, I think, which is a key element to what makes City so great. And yeah, no, I just, I'm really proud that they've made a conscious effort to kind of make sure that they're calling, you know, the vulnerable people at home, a lot of the season card holders, things like that, just making sure that those people that need it the most are getting looked after.
Obviously, the lockdown has given us the opportunity to sort of be a little bit more reflective. We've had time to look back at some of the great successes. The news has sort of filtered out that your England coach, Phil Neville, is leaving. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, when I heard about that, I was really sad, actually. Like you said at the beginning of this conversation, like I've not really touched the ball for a while, and you know that means that I've not been able to be a part of the England setup for a while, and you know that's something that's really close to my heart, and I found it really difficult. But I rang him up straight away and was just like, gutted that you're going to go, but you know, I hope everything works out and everything like that. And he's like, well, hang on, we still got, you know, like the Olympics, and we've still got all this to kind of look forward to. So like, don't get too sad just yet, you know? So I thought, okay, that's still pretty encouraging. But you know, I've learned a lot from Phil. I think what I've recognized the most is, like any relationship, you just have to start building it, you know, from day one. So, I remember when we went to La Manga and there were rumors that he was going to take the job, and he showed up at our camp and it was, you know, declared official. And he stood in front of us, and, you know, he was just very, very, motivating to listen to. You know, I think what he's done for women's football in this country has brought a lot of attention to it. And, he's promoted it in a way that we've never had before. And I think that's been like absolutely enormous in terms of raising the profile of the game and changing the perceptions of, you know, women's football and women's sport in this country as well. So, for me, I'm massively grateful. And like I said, when we had to build our relationship, we started from the ground up, and, you know, he set out a few challenges for me. And I think just like any professional relationship, there's ups and downs, and, you know, you kind of have personality clashes here and there, but on the whole, the challenges that he set out for me were challenges that he knew would help me improve. And, you know, whether they were, you know, actually physical challenges or psychological challenges, I would say predominantly they're probably psychological challenges in terms of backing yourself and believing in yourself and getting to the point where, you know, you can compete at the highest level with the full belief and enjoyment, that leads to a top performance. And I think that showed for me up until I got injured in the World Cup. So, yeah, I'm going to be sad to see him go, just because I know how much he's done, for me personally and for the team throughout the build up to the World Cup and throughout the World Cup. So yeah, I'm going to be sad to see him go.
Karen, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it. It was great to talk to you. Good luck with your cooking and with getting back to football at some stage.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Sam. Enjoy the rest of your day, and yeah, all the best. Take care of yourself.
Fascinating to hear from Karen. Since we recorded that, it does sadly appear there has become less chance of her playing in the near future. Speaking of goalkeepers, David Martin, of course, is the son of West Ham legend and TalkSport favourite Alvin. He's been telling Sam that he had other heroes growing up.
So, yeah, I just about remember Phil Parks, but I think Ludo, obviously, I looked at Ludo and I was just like, he was like, to me, he was like a beast of a man, wasn't he? And
massive.
Yeah, the kit and that. And obviously, Dad was my hero, but I think Ludo wasn't too far behind.
Is Ludek McCloskey, who made all those great saves on the final day of the season in 1995 to stop Man United winning the title and giving it to Blackburn.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the man. So, yeah, it was recently he came into the training ground, really, and that was another surreal feeling. Managed to get a little picture with him, so that's going to go up on the wall definitely. So yeah, that was me. But then I've had, you know, loads of heroes, like someone like David Seaman or Casillas, because when I first went in goal, that was the man that was playing at the time. But yeah, that I would say that's it.
And do you model yourself on any of those goalkeepers, or do you take bits from any other modern goalkeepers? I mean, a lot of people make a lot of the way that Neuer has sort of changed the way a goalkeeper is by the way he uses his feet, and he comes out in that particular way with his legs splayed slightly. Are those things that you watch out for and study for?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, Seaman, for one, he was a goalkeeper that he never tried to make, you know, the easy things look hard. It was always the other way around. And, you know, he wasn't one of them to, you know, throw his arms up and you know, do the cat kind of, you know, tumble and spring, and unless you really needed to, which he could. And you could tell he was a real team player. And I've tried to look at that. I think, no, that's how you should be. You should be there for the team. Yeah. And easy to get caught up in, you know, the selfish, where you want to start making things maybe look a little bit. Of course, there's a time to parry, but, you know, a lot of the time, you know, if you can catch it and take pressure off the team, then great. And that's why I've tried to model myself on through my whole career. And here I am today.
A lot of people don't know that you went at 19 to Liverpool and you moved to Liverpool and you were part of their setup for a while. How much did you learn there?
For me, it was the biggest learning curve I had, and it gave me the foundation what I needed for my career. It was tough going in, so especially the first 18 months. Like, I went in there as a reserve team goalkeeper. I didn't have a goalkeeping coach, so I'd be training out on pitch, which was a blessing in disguise, really. It got me used to trying to receive the ball, making space for myself. First touch, where would I put it for my next pass? And then after, Xavi Valero actually came to the club, and then I managed to go to Hong Kong on a pre-season tour just by default, because they brought another goalkeeper in that it was meant to replace me, but he couldn't get a permit, so I went anyway. Xavi just said, leave him in goal. And that first year, really, I was doing, possessions with, I was playing against Xavi Alonso and Gerrard and Mascherano, and I've had these players running at me in possessions, and I'm thinking, but it got me to a stage where I did improve slowly but surely, and then the goalkeeping came along as well, and it gave me a great foundation for the rest of my career.
Well, listen, we've loved talking to you, so thank you very much for giving us an insight into that and what you've been up to, and hopefully we'll see you on a pitch very, very shortly indeed.
Yeah, Sam, thank you.
So before we leave you, we better briefly touch on what's happening in League One. They've been having meetings over the last 24 hours about whether or not they're going to end their season with playoffs or without playoffs, who's going to be promoted and who's going to be relegated. Remember, the League Two clubs have already voted to end their season with no relegation and to use average points per game to decide their promotion and to stage playoffs. What are we expecting from League One, Crook?
I think similar. I'm not sure how quickly that decision will be reached. Obviously, the EFL board met again on Wednesday. I'm anticipating if it is put to a vote, it will happen either on Friday or maybe even early next week to give all the clubs time to ponder their options over the weekend. But I think it does look like points per game to decide the final table. That won't be weighted. It'll just be a straight points per game decision. And then the top two go up automatically. And then it will be a case of playoffs for the rest. What's interesting here, actually, Wycombe Wanderers, my understanding is, have been quite vocal that they do not think it's safe to resume the season. Now, they do have a vested interest because on points per game,
they get promoted.
They would get promoted.
And they're in eighth position in the league, so that's a massive jump.
Yeah, precisely. But someone made the point to me, and I think it will be irrelevant anyway because it will be points per game. But if it wasn't, they just decided to freeze the season now and have a playoff to decide who goes up. Well, surely Wickham would not deem it safe to take part in that playoff. I wonder if their tone might change a bit.
Be interesting to see what happens, won't it? Because there's obviously quite a few lively characters involved in that meeting as well, who have been quite vocal over the last week or so. Four Egyptians were nicked for an armed robbery this week wearing Mohamed Salah mask, would you believe? The men were picked up and arrested after attempting to loot a store in Cairo, but they obviously didn't have the same sort of speed and awareness as Mohamed Salah, because the cops pinched them as soon as they tried to escape. Listen, if you're going to wear a mask, it might as well be Mohamed Salah. Why not? Pharaoh cop, mate. What's the latest on Hennis the Goat? Remember last week we brought you this story about the lack of mascot at Cologne, the first time they've been without him or her in a decade. Do we know the sex of the goat? Is it a him or a her? Are we sure on this, Luce? Do we know?
Right. So I've been quite intrigued by this goat.
Yeah, I know you have.
All morning I've been researching it.
Okay.
So we're on Hennes number 9. And then I've tracked down the zoo he's based at.
All right.
So fingers crossed we can get in touch with his carer.
So he doesn't live on site?
No, he doesn't live on site. Although there's lots of videos of him escaping.
Really? From the zoo or the stadium?
Escaping his handler and running around the ground. But then also he's been involved in a bit of controversy as well.
Why? What happened?
So in 2015, Anthony Uja...
Right, yeah.
He scored a goal, obviously was very involved in the moment, went over to Hennes and picked him up by his horns.
Oh, no.
I know, as you can imagine, you know, I'm sure he's a nice bloke, is Anthony, but it's, you know, it was a bit uncalled for. So he ended up having to go to the zoo and apologise to Henners and feed him a few carrots.
It's a bit off, isn't it, getting horny with a goat?
Oh, sounds gruff. Right, live commentary of the Bundesliga is on TalkSport this weekend, including Wolfsburg against Borussia Dortmund on Saturday. Crook and I will be bringing you the quiz on Twitter on Friday night on the Twitter feed. 8 o'clock, smack bang in the middle of the Berlin Derby, so you can join us for a watch-along and 50 questions on football as well. Lucy will be charged with trying to track down Hennes in the next week and find his handler, so we'll try and get that person on. Next week. So we'll see you then. Stay safe, stay sensible, and enjoy your football.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.